right now. He gave me a mean squeeze, starbursts of sensation flaring beneath his fingers, and I squeaked.
The key to success, Arden, is the realization that failure is a temporary condition.
What's that supposed to mean? Before I could finish, he pulled me down upon his cock, and the rest of my question disappeared into a strangled shriek. I flailed, wildly clutching at his shoulders, shock and excitement and a splash of panic blending into a unique and special cocktail. But he only breached me. He didn't force me. He left the descent under my control. That sweet, harsh glide that burned so very beautifully. I took him all. Took the pain and the pleasure, the stretch and the pressure, the whole gorgeous invasion of it. And he let me see. For once he let me see. The helpless flutter of his eyelashes, the creep of heat across his cheeks, the way his lips parted on a soundless groan. He looked vulnerable and a little bit wrecked. Softness in his eyes along with the haze of passion. I threw back my head, full of savage triumph because I'd made this happen. And this flawless, unreachable man, with all his mysteries and his sadness and his strength, was mine. He pressed his mouth to my throat, warm and wet with the scrape of teeth, and I rode him like a rodeo cowboy. Ye fucking whore. I was alive with small hurts, aches inside and out, but they felt like fireflies in my skin, barely recognizable as hurt at all, because everything was igniting into bliss. His hands, his lips, his cock driving into me, rough and hard and fucking perfect. The noises he was making against my skin, reciprocal ecstasy shuddering out of him. And, oh, words. Fierce, tender, slightly muffled words becoming their own prayer.
Arden, oh, Arden, my Arden.
I didn't really have breath or brain to reply, but my answer was everywhere. In the pulse that beat for him, and the body that yielded to him, and the pain I'd borne for him. Yours, 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 yours! Sweat was slicking down me, gathering in the creases of my groin and behind my knees. And I was probably going to have to take up yoga again or do something about my core strength because, as much as my arse was loving the adventure, the pace was getting punishing. But then Caspian gave this harsh and shattered cry, his hands dragging me down and pinning me in place. His cock so deep in me it felt practically embedded. I screamed. My prostate launching its own little hallelujah chorus as Caspian's teeth plunged into the bit where my neck met my shoulder. It was the aggression that undid me, seeing him so lost to it, so utterly out of control, the final riff in my sex rock anthem of rapture. Next thing I knew, I was a full-body shaking, mind-obliterating, orgasmic whiteout, static snowflakes behind my eyes, every nerve I had electric. And my cock went off like a party popper, extravagant ribbons of cum shooting between us. When I was next capable of anything, I said, "Ow, ow, 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 ow!" Because suddenly everything that had hurt in a good way was starting to hurt in a bad way. Particularly my arse, which was sore and sticky and throbby, and had a cock in it. Caspian, who was still trembling, gentled me before I could freak out, since the need to not be in pain had become really rather urgent, but my coordination wasn't up to the task. And then he very carefully eased himself out of me. I tried to stand, only to discover I was head to toe spaghetti. Thankfully, Caspian caught me before the floor did, wrapped me up in the scarily pristine cream blanket that had previously been draped over the arm of the sofa, and drew me back into his lap, somehow managing to position me so I wasn't resting too much weight on my poor bum. I meant to protest, because I was a mess and the blanket was lovely, but it was all soft and cozy. I couldn't quite muster the will.
I tucked my head under Caspian's chin, and he brushed his fingers against the nape of my neck.
So lightly I thought it was an accident at first. But no, it was a caress. One that carefully roused my sensation, battered flesh to shivers of softly tingling pleasure. If he'd been holding me less tightly, I'd have arched greedily into his touch, and probably made a million bits of me immediately start hurting again. But he didn't let me, just kept me safe and helpless. His kindness as ruthless as his cruelty, and the sweetness of his touch running in rivulets across my skin. Since my mouth was the only bit of me capable of movement, it opened and emitted a weird, drunken purring. Caspian's breath stirred the damply curling hair at my brow in a nearly kiss.
"You're as delightful in pleasure as you are in pain."
"I'm good with both," I mumbled.
"You are good."
He pushed his hand into my hair, his palm curving to fit the base of my skull.
"So good."
I was vaguely aware we were talking nonsense to each other, but it didn't matter. The words were less important than the exchange of them. Frankly, he could have been telling me,
"Wibble, kerplunk, gargle, blip."
As long as he did it in that tone of dazed admiration. My brain was cottage cheese at this point, so I stopped trying to make it do things, and let myself float on the magic carpet of his care.
"Arden?"
he asked after a moment or two. At least I thought it was a moment or two. I might have been asleep.
"You are. You are all right, aren't you?"
"What?"
"You aren't."
He cleared a trace of huskiness from his voice.
"I mean, I didn't..."
"You hurt me, then fucked me, now you're holding me. What more could a boy want?" He laughed, or made some shaky sound close to a laugh anyway, partially muffling it against the side of my head. "And you had fun too, right?"
"You gave yourself to me like a gift. Offered without restraint things I would never have dared ask or hope for. And you were so beautiful I could hardly believe that you would do this for me. So yes, Arden, I had fun."
Some of the heat accumulated in my arse redistributed itself, giving me a serious case of the warm fuzzies. I'm not, you know... I'm not beautiful.
"Do you want me to turn you over my lap and spank you again?"
"Not right now."
"Then be quiet."
Nestling close, I hid my smile in his neck.
"Then be quiet"
was hardly the three-word declaration of my dreams. But right then it fell upon my ears as tenderly as if it were. He was, after all, Caspian Hart, not some tamer beast. And anyway, I wasn't very into princes. Chapter 4. I wasn't really aware of being awake or not awake, but I guess I must have been not awake, because I was woken up by Caspian whispering to me.
"I'm sorry, sweetheart, but we'll be landing soon."
I whimpered, Do we have to? Can't we live here forever?
On the plane?
Yes. I curled into him stubbornly. We can spend all our time having sex and cuddling.
We can also do those things on the ground, and with a smaller carbon footprint.
It should have been reassuring. Well, it was reassuring, since I hadn't seriously expected we'd become joint founders of a flying and fucking commune. But I was feeling fragile. In a way that was completely unlike the raw vulnerability of writhing naked and sobbing over Caspian's knee. And a lot less fun.
Arden? What's the matter? You haven't changed your mind, have you?
He sounded so genuinely anxious that I came in immediately with a no. And anyway, it was true. Well, mostly.
Then what's wrong?
He asked. I stared at my toes. The polish needed touching up. Also, maybe Sally Bowles Green hadn't been the best colour choice. I looked a little gangrenous down there. I don't know. I think maybe I'm failing London.
How could you possibly be failing London?
Same way I failed Oxford.
You have no idea whether you failed Oxford.
He curled a comforting hand over my knee.
Your results haven't even been released yet. And when they are, you'll get a 2-1 exactly like everyone else.
He was probably right. You had to fuck up super hard to get out of Oxford with anything less than a 2-2. But that led to a situation in which a lower pass was as good as an admission of failure anyway. Even if I do get a 2-1, I won't deserve it.
It's hardly an assessment of your moral character, Arden.
But I got offered this incredible opportunity, and I squandered it. Caspian sighed. I thought he was about to tell me to grow up and stop whining, but instead he just drew me closer.
Oxford is only a university, he murmured. And there are many things besides the academic to learn at university.
What, like how to go 6 weeks without doing any laundry?
Like what sort of man you wish to become.
I'm not sure I even figured that out.
Yes, you have.
He leaned down and kissed the tip of my nose. The playful gesture was a strange contrast to the sincerity of the words. But I treasured both. Believed in both. Mustered a slightly wavery grin. Well, I must be doing something right since you like me. But when it comes to everything else, I don't have a clue.
You told me you were interested in journalism.
I am. Except all I've done so far is write a few articles.
Have you been able to place them?
A couple of emails had come in during my Kinloch Bear v. Heartbreak exile, except I hadn't really been in any state to appreciate them. Yes. I mean, mainly online and stuff.
That's wonderful.
Oh, God, he sounded all proud of me.
And seems to directly contradict your assertion that you don't know what you're doing.
I just feel like I'm fucking up another amazing opportunity. You take care of everything, and what do I have to show for myself? A satirical review of expensive mineral water brands.
It's a perfectly reasonable start.
But I had weeks. I could have learned Mandarin, or written The Great American Novel.
Do you want to learn Mandarin or write The Great American Novel?
Not exactly. That made him laugh, his breath ruffling my hair. And I guess I was being a bit silly. I wrote something that I thought might work for Milieu, I admitted. But I haven't submitted it yet.
Milieu?
Caspian! I thunked my forehead against him. It's a high society lifestyle magazine. You're regularly in it.
I pay very little attention to what other people say about me. Besides, I have lawyers who manage these things on my behalf.
I pouted, wounded for milieu. It's not a gossip rag. We're not talking 12 shocking things about Caspian Heart, you won't believe number 7 type material.
I see.
Except clearly, he didn't. Milieu's like this quintessentially British thing, you know. It's been around since like 17-oh-something, and somehow manages to be glamorous and ridiculous at the same time. I find that combination incredibly charming. His hand slipped between us, his fingers tugging lightly at one of my nipple rings.
I definitely see the appeal.
I'm not glamorous. I paused. Wait, are you saying I'm ridiculous?
I'm saying I find your combination of qualities unique and intriguing. And you don't have to explain what you like to me. It's enough that you like it.
Milieu's probably the closest you can get nowadays to being in an Evelyn Waugh novel. Only without all the war, Catholicism, alcoholism, mental collapse, and dead children. And anyway, I grew up reading it. I'd absolutely love to be a part of it.
Then why haven't you sent in your article?
Well, I squirmed. He poked me. Caspian Heart actually poked me. Which I would have found hilarious if I hadn't been in the middle of a major moop attack. What if they say no?
Then you'll find something else.
I thought you were only supposed to have one dream.
That's a sinister lie perpetrated by Hollywood. You can have as many dreams as you dare imagine.
I pulled a dubious face. That just sounds like a long list of things to mess up.
To truly want something is to make yourself vulnerable.
He gave me one of his most uncertain smiles. The ones I half believed were only for me.
None know that better than I.
He kind of had a point. I still can't quite believe you came all the way to Kinloch Bearvie.
I have crossed continents, risked millions and ruined lives in pursuit of my business aims. Why do you believe I would do any less for you?
I couldn't help wondering how the whole situation would have played out if it had been reversed. Probably I'd have hidden under the nearest duvet, emerging only to scavenge for food in ruined supermarkets after the fall of civilization, and Caspian and I would have never seen each other again. Ugh. I sucked. I'll try to do the same, I said. I mean, if you ever need me to come for you. He laughed, not in exactly a nasty way. Only I hadn't made a joke. I guess it had sounded like one, given he was. Well, him, and I was, well, me. And I couldn't quite imagine in what topsy-turvy looking-glass world he would need me to play rescuer. Getting into stupid scrapes was my gift, not his. Reaching for my hand, he tucked it into his.
Send your article to Milieu.
Okay, okay, fine. But when they say no and I'm crushed and my life is over, I'm blaming you.
Firstly, they might not say no. Secondly, if they do, you'll find something else.
What something else?
It doesn't matter. Whatever quickens your magnificent heart will eventually bring you success.
You really believe that? He gave me a look so full of warmth and pride that right then I could have turned tides, pulled the stars from the sky.
I do.
Does, multinational banking and financial services make you feel that way?
It doesn't have to. I'm not you, Arden.
He sounded sort of quelling and sad. And both were walls in their way. I gave his cold fingers a little squeeze. It doesn't mean you have any less right to happiness than I do.
You make me happy.
I couldn't tell if that was romantic or a lot of responsibility. Maybe both. Then you better make damn sure we spend more time together in London. No more abandoning me in One Hyde Park.
Of course not. I shall endeavour to make myself available to you.
I like the sound of that.
I wriggled into a sitting position and tucked my knees up. Although, considering everything that had happened on this plane, modesty was pretty irrelevant right now.
When?
Pardon?
When are you going to make yourself available to me? I want names, I want places, I want dates. His hand went to his mouth, I think covering a smile.
When I said to pursue what inspired you, I didn't mean my schedule.
It's not your schedule I'm after. It's you.
Oh.
He looked oddly abashed.
Arden?
What? You can't give me life advice and then go weird when I follow it.
No, I simply wasn't expecting you to apply it immediately. And to me.
I shrugged a bit self-consciously. Well, you quicken my heart. And also other bits of... His kiss cut me off, unexpected in its clumsy, closed-lipped sweetness.
When do you want to see me? He asked.
How about, say, right now? Today?
I'd love to, but...
A shadow deepened his eyes to grey.
It's not possible. I have to work.
Of course he did. Caspian's life was nothing but work. I'd known that from the beginning, and while I was capable of immense feats of whininess, there was no way I was setting myself up in opposition to his job. Because if TV had taught me anything, that was how you got murdered. See damages, see Luther, see scandal. Tomorrow?
It's a deal. Now, come on.
He nudged his nose gently against mine.
There's just about time to shower.
If it was an attempt to distract me, it totally worked. There's a shower. He nodded and led me off to the bathroom. Where there really was a shower.
A shower?
On a private jet. It wasn't big enough for two, unfortunately. But the water pressure was way better than plenty of showers I'd taken in buildings on the ground. I stood under the spray, wincing as the droplet stung my poor arse. But my muscles appreciated the attention. My knees were still wobbly, though, and my head felt light and stuffy at the same time. Like my brain had been entirely replaced with candy floss. Happy, shiny candy floss. Oh, wow. Was this really my life? And did Caspian really say all that stuff to me? And if being fucked on a plane got me into the Mile High Club, did being fucked on a plane with its own shower make me a platinum member? I wasn't sure how much water there was, so once I got over the fit of giggles at the sheer impossibility of everything that had happened to me lately, I got out, toweled myself off carefully, and dressed. I didn't remember Caspian bringing me my clothes, but I was so well fucked and so well cared for that I probably wouldn't have remembered if a barbershop quartet had parachuted in and performed Bohemian Rhapsody. Mainly, I was relieved I didn't have to wander his plane with my junk hanging out. No sign of Caspian back in the cabin. Just the indentations we had left on the sofa, and what was clearly a splash of my dried cum on the floor. I stared at it in horror, before rushing back to the bathroom to get warm water and a cloth. I was on my hands and knees, scrubbing urgently, when Caspian strolled in, pulling a jumper, fresh but otherwise identical to the one he'd been wearing before, over his head. It reminded me, abruptly, that while I'd been about as naked as it was possible to be, he'd been fully clothed as usual. I'd found it hot at the time, but now, watching his abs vanish behind a curtain of whisper-soft cashmere, I felt a little cheated. They were quite some abs, and I wanted to make an ordnance survey of their valleys. With my tongue? Caspian, however, was staring at me like I'd gone mad.
"What on earth are you doing now?"
There's... I pointed.
"Leave it, Arden. Someone will see to it."
"Oh my God, no!" He looked a little startled at my vehemence. "I'm working class," I explained, rubbing away at the carpet. "Middle class if you push it, and I absolutely refuse to contribute to a universe where it's someone's job to clean up my cum." He sighed, though I told myself there was more affection in it than exasperation, and walked out. That threw me a little. Maybe I'd already got too used to the petting and the smiling and the "Oh, my Arden and your magnificent heart" type sweet talk. But I guess he had calls to make. Or maybe watching me de-ejaculate his plane was so unsexy he felt obliged to remove himself from my vicinity. Thankfully, he came back a moment or two later and crouched down beside me. He'd brought a bottle of varnish. "What are you doing?" I asked, as he plucked the cloth out of my hand. He sprayed and mopped, and very soon all trace of me was gone, leaving the plush carpet as uniformly ecru as it had been before I spooged all over it. He glanced up and gave me one of his apparently becoming somewhat less rare smiles.
"If there is to be a universe in which the job of cleaning up your cum exists, it might as well be mine."
I laughed and leaned in, hoping for a kiss. You know, you can be weirdly romantic sometimes. He stiffened, in the whole body rather than exciting way, and pulled back, flushing.
"I don't know what you mean."
Caspian, it wasn't an insult.
"No, I know, but..."
He got to his feet, which put an end to our tender moment over a cum stain.
"I can't let you pretend that I'm..."
"Oh, what? Pretend that you're kind and funny and sweet, that you look like a god and fuck like the devil?" I rolled onto the floor and lay there on my stomach in the fashion of a kid about to throw a tantrum. I wasn't, actually, but the urge to full-body facepalm was strong right then. "Can't you for once just let me enjoy being with you, and trust me to handle the emotional fallout when it comes?" He nodded, though he still looked slightly freaked out.
"I'm sorry. You're right. But you have the most peculiar sense of romance."
I pushed under my elbow and attempted a sultry look. "I'll take what I can get, Mr. Hart." He gazed down at me, the curves of his lips softened by another burgeoning smile.
"Come and sit with me, Arden. We're about to descend."
I decamped. I wanted to be in his lap again with his arms around me, touchy, needy idiot that I was. But I knew it wasn't fair to push him. I'd promised him that degree of control in Kinloch Bearvie, and he hadn't exactly been measly with his attention. So I squidged up next to him on the sofa instead, and put my hand down between us, in what I hoped was an accessible and appealing way. For a little while we sat quietly. Then I noticed his hand had somehow ended up right next to mine. And weirdly, that was okay. Better than okay. It was sort of lovely. "You bought me Pocky," I reminded him.
"Hardly an act from which myths are spun."
"That doesn't matter." I turned to face him, tucking a knee under me. "It's not the size of the gesture that counts, it's..."
"What you do with it."
I laughed. Not so much at the joke, but at the fact it came from Caspian. He was so entrancing like this. Shyly playful behind his most severe facade. What's romantic to me isn't the rote stuff like flowers or chocolate or serenading someone on a balcony at moonlight.
"I will not be serenading you ever."
"Of course not," I grinned. "I'm sure you'd outsource it to a serenading company."
"The best regarded and most exclusive serenading company in the world."
He derailed me by being funny, damn it. I made one last attempt to make my point.
"I feel, romanced when you do things that show that you know me,
as well as care for me."
"That simple, hmm?"
"What about when you rang me the night before my finals?"
"I was desperate to hear your voice again."
"But you knew I'd be scared, and you reached out to me. That was romantic. Just like when you came to Oxford, and to Kinlochbervie." His eyebrow lifted into its most sardonic arch.
"You seem to find a lot of romance in my behaving selfishly."
"I don't know if it was selfish or not, but I do know I needed you and you were there."
"Did you also need Pocky?"
"Hell yes! Matcha chocolate cookie is nearly impossible to get over here." His expression turned thoughtful.
"I suppose I'll have to take your word for it."
"Feel free to look for yourself."
"Not about the Pocky."
His hand slid fully over mine and claimed it.
"About what makes you happy?"
"Generally a good plan in any... shit, I'd nearly dropped the R word. The other R word. Generally a good plan. Hey, you know what else makes me happy?" Least plausible cover-up ever. Way to go, Arden. But he seemed to be willing to let me get away with it.
"What?"
"When you, I was unexpectedly blushing, though I wasn't sure if it was because of what I was saying now or what I nearly said before. When you call me your slut."
"Because you find it romantic?"
"Yes. Because it's just for me." Caspian was silent for what felt like ages.
"I think I was right the first time,"
he murmured. "What do you mean?"
"You do have a very strange sense of romance."
Chapter 5. There was a car waiting for us at Heathrow, a proper billionaire car this time with a driver, to take us to One Hyde Park. It felt odd coming back. I couldn't have called it a homecoming, because I was pretty sure that shining glass monster would never feel like home. But I was, in a way, more comfortable than I had been the first time I'd stepped into its gold and marble moor. Now it was a familiar gold and marble moor. Put it that way. Unfortunately, Caspian couldn't stay. I hadn't expected him to, but it didn't stop the swell of disappointment from whichever organ generated the stuff. The balked duct. He was, however, very nice about leaving. No vanishing abruptly into the night like the hero villain from a gothic novel. There was only genuine reluctance, an apology, and a kiss on my nose before he left, which was something he seemed to be making rather a habit of. Not that I was complaining. It was just unexpected. Even, ha! Romantic.
And my nose did have this very slight, almost questioning up-tilt at the end, like maybe it was waiting for him.
Nasal care dispensed. He wished me a good night and promised to see me soon. I trailed him into the hallway, trying not to look too desolate and puppyish, and probably failing hard. He hesitated in the doorway. For a happy moment I thought he might be about to change his mind, but all he said was,
"You should have a word."
"A word with who?"
"A word,"
he repeated, looking everywhere but my face.
"In case you need... in case you... in case you don't like..."
"Oh, a safe word." He nodded, a touch of pink rising to his cheeks. "Why?" Since I couldn't catch his eye, I had to put all my blatant invitation into my voice. "Are you going to do terrible things to me while I beg you to stop?" Pink was long gone. Now he was very red indeed, and looking so much like he was wishing the ground would swallow him whole that I felt a bit bad. But then he nodded again.
"Assuming, that is, you have no objections."
"None whatsoever. If only he would see my smile. I absolutely and categorically welcome any depravity you care to practice on me."
"Thank you. But I still think you should have a...
He couldn't even say it. "A safe word." Another nod. I'd never seen him so uncertain. It made me want to pull him back into the apartment, wrap him up tight in my arms, and never let him go. But I knew he wouldn't let me. He cleared his throat.
"Arden?"
Shit. I needed an actual word. But my mind had gone completely blank. I can't think of anything.
"Any word will do."
He shifted impatiently.
"I understand red is traditional."
Red was boring. The silence stretched out between us. Every single word in the entirety of the human history of language was somewhere else right then.
I know I've probably startled you. Maybe even frightened you. But, Arden, I really don't want to hurt you in any way that..."
Oh, God, the look in his eyes. Like a half-tame wolf the second before its spirit broke. "No," I cried. "No, it's fine. My safe word is, Mace Windu."
"It's what?"
Caspian asked finally. I shrugged. "He's the badass Jedi with the purple lightsaber."
"Yes, I'm aware of that."
He sounded faintly affronted that I doubted his knowledge of the Jedi Council.
"I just don't know why you'd..." "It doesn't matter. If that's what you'll remember. If it makes you feel safe."
I thought about telling him he made me feel safe, but I didn't think he'd believe me. "It's Samuel L. Jackson," I said instead. "Of course I feel motherfucking safe." Caspian really did leave after that. He had his phone out as he stepped into the elevator, immediately back into work mode. And I was, once again, alone in One Hyde Park. But it wasn't so bad. And God, I was spoiled. There were homeless people, And here I was, conceding that an extravagant exclusive apartment in central London was not so bad. I unpacked and changed into my whale print lounge trousers, for the sake of my arse. Although not before I'd spent some time admiring how red and totally owned it looked in the bathroom mirror. Then I arranged myself, stomach down on the bed, and got to grips with the emails I'd neglected while in Kinloch Bervy. I even made a spreadsheet so I could keep track of what I'd written, where I'd sent out, and what the outcome was. And, okay, it was only 5 lines long, but it was still a motherfucking spreadsheet, motherfuckers. Finally, I settled into brainstorming up some fresh ideas. Because Caspian was right. Even if Milieu rejected me, there were still countless opportunities for frivolous article writing floating about in the universe. And no, it wouldn't make me a billionaire or change the world. But a lot of things that changed the world were actively bad. And this was what I wanted to do. I was so caught up in writing. A column pitch for GQ entitled, The 10 Most Awesome Things in the World Right Now, that I thought I could put together monthly and research entirely on the internet, that I almost brain-hazed right through the ringing of my phone. I scrabbled for it and answered about a second before I would have lost the call. Hello?
Caspian's voice, perhaps still the part of him most familiar to me, slipped down my spine like an unexpected caress.
Gosh, it's you. Hi.
Did I wake you?
No, I was just... What time is it?
It's late. Nearly midnight, I'm afraid.
I guess I'd stopped expecting more than terse little texts, so this was almost as startling as it was gratifying. Is everything okay?
Yes, of course.
He sounded slightly flustered, and then fell silent. An intriguing possibility crept into my mind. Is this... I mean... Do you miss me?
Actually, I thought you might prefer to hear from me personally, because I won't be able to see you tomorrow as I'd hoped. I have a conference call that will likely take most of my evening.
Oh. I'd been back less than a day and we were doing this again. Seriously? And right after all the promises he'd made? Well, okay, the promises he carefully hadn't made. Oh! Still, at least he'd phoned instead of sending one of his heart-crushing little texts.
In fact, the whole week is looking somewhat overwhelming, and I need to be in Paris on Wednesday. Can we do Friday?
Sure. Whatever.
I'm truly sorry, he sighed. I would much rather be with you.
On some level, I recognized that he was trying. But it was still too reminiscent of the treatment that had driven me to Kinloch Bervy in the first place. And what if, by the time Friday rolls round, there's something else you absolutely have to do?
Sweetheart, I'm the owner and CEO of a multinational corporation. There will be times when I have to work. But I give you my word that I'll be there on Friday. Come hell, high water, or the simultaneous collapse of the dollar, the yen, and the euro.
I muttered balefully.
What was that?
Calling me sweetheart. It's cheating.
I'm sorry. I won't if you don't want me to.
No, I do. That's the problem. Fuck, I couldn't start an argument now. It couldn't be my first contribution to our newly reconciled relationship. And besides, this was who Caspian was. There was no point in agreeing to bang a billionaire if you took issue with them, you know, being a billionaire. Friday's fine. And if the entire global economy implodes, I won't mind if you can't make it. Somehow, I knew he was smiling. and when he spoke his voice was all silk and menace and mirth.
I was thinking you could perhaps arrange for sushi.
Well, that was definitely promising, and would hopefully console me for the last time I'd attempted to seduce him with dinner and light bondage. And what will you bring?
My tie.
I made an undignified gleeful squeaking noise, and then flailed desperately after Sexy. I look forward to it, Mr. Hart. There was another silence. I was fully expecting him to wish me good night and hang up. And I would have actually been okay with that, since I'd had more of Caspian today than I would have thought possible before Kinloch Bervey. But instead, he asked,
How are you feeling?
I feel good. My ass feels sore. I think about you every time I try to sit down. I grinned, even though he couldn't see it. And I'll probably be thinking about you later, too.
Is that so?
Oh, yes. I'll be thinking of you very hard indeed. He laughed, uninhibited for once and joyous.
Is this how you've spent your evening?
What? No! That's going to be my reward. I've been super productive.
What have you been doing?
Wow. This was... wow. If life was BuzzFeed, it would definitely be near the top of the Arden's Best All-Time Moments list. Caspian Hart had hurt me and fucked me and was now asking about my day. And it was perfect. Like having a real boyfriend. I pushed my laptop aside and swooned into a happy heap on top of the duvet. I'll tell you, but I need to know something first. Where are you right now? He hesitated for a moment.
I'm on my balcony,
he said warily.
Thinking about having a cigarette. Why?
I just wanted to be able to picture you while we talked. And I could. Waiting like Rapunzel at the top of some great glass tower, haloed in artificial gold from the city that lay at his feet. I wanted to tell him, you can come back to me. I wanted to beg, please don't be alone. But he already knew that. And at some point he was going to have to choose for himself. So I went on, lightly. It's not very exciting. I organized myself and drafted another couple of articles.
Did you send your piece to Milieu?
Heap. Technically, no.
No and technically no the same thing?
Kind of?
Is something holding you back?
He asked gently. You mean, apart from anxiety, insecurity, and raging imposter syndrome?
Yes.
I sighed. I guess I keep tinkering pointlessly with it. Even little silences felt epic on the phone. Finally, he said,
Would it help if you shared it with me?
I blinked. Seriously? You want to read my crappy article?
Well, I did, but... His voice turned teasing. Now you've told me it's crappy, I've changed my mind.
Hey, I'm just managing your expectations. I could read it to you, if you have, you know, the interest.
Of course. Give me a moment.
I heard the click of a lighter, followed by Caspian's indrawn breath.
How about we make a pact? You read it to me and then submit it to Milieu.
What if you think it's terrible?
Unless I think it's terrible. But if I don't think it's terrible, you have to send it.
All right.
Wait, what was happening? Had I really offered to read my article to Caspian? And had he really said yes? I was suddenly and completely overwhelmed by self-consciousness. This was a man whose time was so valuable he needed his own plane. Also, what if I sucked? What if I sucked so badly he stopped believing I was charming and special and adorable? What if I put him off wanting to fuck me? Ah! But then, did I trust Caspian or didn't I? In what deranged world did I live in that I was up for him tying me up and hitting me, but so-so on showing him some words I'd arranged into a particular order? And hell, if I didn't have the bollocks to share this with someone who was demonstrably on my side, how in God's name was I going to face editors and publishers and a public who would have nothing else to judge me by? So, I did it. I read the damn article to Caspian Hart. And he was nice about it. I wished I could have seen his face, but he made soft, amused noises at the bits I'd intended to be funny. And afterward, he told me he liked it, with just the right amount of conviction that I got all flustered and glowy. As praise went, it was pretty straightforward. But any more and I would have felt patronized. I was under no illusions that what I produced was a heartbreaking work of staggering genius. But I hoped it was, well, good enough to entertain someone while they were on the loo or stuck in a queue anyway.
"You have a very engaging voice," Caspian said. "Although, of course, I'm somewhat biased."
I squirmed with pleasure. "Thank you."
"Given that this is not my field, and I have little experience or expertise to bring to bear, would my feedback have any value to you?"
And that was when I realized he was self-conscious too, in his own way, and wanting to be helpful. It steeled my nerves and made me nod, pointlessly, into the phone. "Absolutely." My trepidation wasn't entirely unjustified. You didn't become a billionaire through sensitivity and good karma. I was half expecting him to annihilate me, not maliciously, but by dint of having no conception of how lesser mortals might feel about things. But he was actually perfect, focused and thoughtful and gentle, so that rather than leaving me crushed into the dust, I felt weirdly excited about what I'd written. The ways I could refine it and make it even better. None of his observations were particularly harsh. They just drew my attention in small, careful ways to places where my meaning wasn't quite clear, or the structure wasn't quite right. It wasn't anything any other moderately astute reader couldn't have told me. Except it was exactly what I needed. And it was even better because it was Caspian. I didn't for a moment believe this was how he interacted when he was billionaireing, but it still offered a glimpse of that side of him. A man who, for all his cold ways and his locked-up heart, understood people and how to motivate and inspire them.
I hope it's useful.
He finished.
I'm not exactly a literary critic.
It's wonderful. You're wonderful. He made a snuffly noise, which I thought might have been embarrassment, and was adorable, then cleared his throat.
Remember our pact?
I'm going to make these changes and I'll send it. Promise, promise, promise.
Then I should probably say goodnight.
I guess you probably should. Except neither of us did. We just hung around in the silence like teenagers. Until Caspian cleared his throat again.
I'll see you on Friday.
I'm crossing my fingers for the future of the dollar, the euro, and the yen.
As am I. Good night, Arden.
And then he was gone. As I laid down, by the terms of our pact, OMG Caspian could be the cutest sometimes. I gave my article one last edit and then fired it off to Milieu. I really hoped they wanted it. Abandoned Hospital Rave seemed so them. It was quirky and unusual. And honestly, the whole affair had reeked of privilege. Of exclusivity and payoffs and self-conscious slumming. An ultimately upper-class hobby. I also hoped the fact that I'd sent it at 2 a.m. made me look like a wild party animal, rather than just, say, horrendously unemployed. Regardless, I felt shiny and accomplished as I put my laptop away and gingerly rolled myself up in the duvet. I did wonder how well I'd sleep, given the requirement to lie on my stomach. But I didn't wonder long, because in minutes, I was gone. Blissfully, totally gone. Chapter 6. I only woke up because I could smell smoke. Not house burning down type smoke. The lightly toasted skunk-flavored smoke that meant somebody had weed nearby. I rolled over with a muffled moan, which was followed by an entirely unmuffled yell. Ellery was sitting right there, back against the footrest, spliff in her hand. She took a nonchalant toke. "So, you're here?" "You're in my bedroom. What is this, a Be More Obvious contest?" "No, it's a..." I was way too non-consensually naked for banter. "What are you doing here?" She shrugged and kept on smoking. For all her half-closed eyes and general stoner air, you didn't have to be Jean Grey to notice she didn't seem entirely happy. She was wearing new rocks, suspender tights and a barely-there T-shirt dress with the Rolling Stone's Sticky Fingers tongue on it. From the smudged glitter on her eyelids, she'd probably been out all night. I guess I was lucky she hadn't brought a bunch of friends with her this time. "Do you want to crash?" I tried. "Take a shower or something?" Another shrug. Another drag. I resisted the urge to flap the smoke away with my hand. "Are you really just going to sit there, getting high, on my bed?" Shrug. I was sensing a theme. "Okay, fine, but I think I might go back to sleep if it's all the same to you." Since no answer forthcame, I wriggled onto my stomach, tucked myself into the duvet, and stuffed my head under the pillow. I didn't actually believe I would prance off to Slumberland with my, okay, I was still drawing a blank on what to call whatever I was doing with Caspian, with Caspian's sister sitting right there. But it was better than effortfully extracting whatever the fuck was up Ellery's arse. "Are you coming to my birthday or what?" she asked, the moment I was settled. "Caspian was supposed to give you an invitation, but probably he didn't bother." I refused to exit the pillow. "You didn't RSVP?" "I haven't had time." Also, RSVPing scared the crap out of me. What if I did it wrong and everyone was secretly laughing at me? "If you don't RSVP, they won't let you in." "Ellery, what time is it?" No reply. I sighed into the bed. "I'll RSVP today. I promise." There was a long silence. I was starting to regret my sleep-based strategy because it meant I was essentially stuck face down with nothing to do until Ellery got bored, passed out, or we both died of old age. "It's lame." If Hazel had been here, she'd have thrown back, "Not as lame as your use of ableist language." Just like she did when I was in my teens. The words sounded so familiar in my head, it was almost as if she was there to say them. I thought better of trying them on Ellery, though. "What is?" "The party." That was a pretty low-key way of describing what was likely to be the poshest do of my life. A party was when you went to someone's house with a bottle of £4.99 wine and ended up sitting on the floor because the living room was too small for the 12 people who turned up.